Welcome back to Biology with Alexandra. So today we're going to be looking at 8.3, which is photosynthesis. And we're going to start with some quick recap on all you need to know about the topic before we get into the nuts and bolts of how this works. When we were looking at cellular respiration, we were looking at a catabolic reaction, which means that we're breaking something down and we were breaking down our glucose. And this time with photosynthesis, the plants are creating their own energy or their own ATP using carbon dioxide and water with a byproduct of oxygen, and that is how we breathe. And so this creation reaction is called an anabolic reaction. So there are several parts of this process. And first we have photolysis, which is the splitting of water, and we use light. So this is the light-dependent reaction. And later on we'll be looking at the light-independent reaction. So we'll be talking about the chloroplast in this video, and if we just remember the structure, we have the outer membrane, the inner membrane, then the inside kind of cytoplasm is called the stroma, then we have these granums, which are made up of little stacks of thylakoids. So you see these stacks, those are called the thylakoids, and together they're a granum. They're connected by what's called a stromal lamella or lamellae. And if we were to cut one in half, the intersection, then we can see that there are lumen, little spaces in between the thylakoids in which things will be happening later on. If you can imagine zooming in to the thylakoid, which is where the pigment of chlorophyll is stored, we can see what is going on in this light-dependent reaction. So first of all, we have our thylakoid membrane, if you can imagine that. On one side is the stroma, or the cytoplasm of our chloroplast, and on the other side is the thylakoid space, or the lumen. And so we need our sun to fall onto photosystem 2, which is the first protein complex which holds our chlorophyll. And so photosystem 2, it accepts 680 nanometer wavelength of light, so we can remember that it's different from photosystem 1. And the chlorophyll and the electrons within that are excited by this energy from the sun, and we call that photoexcitation. And now that means that our electrons have increased their energy state. This allows the electrons to jump down to the next protein in the chain, and they lose their energy while doing so, and this allows us to pump hydrogen ions from the stroma into our thylakoid interior. And this is against the concentration gradient, and that's why we need this energy from the sun and these electrons jumping down for it to happen. Now, since our electrons have left photosynthesis system 2, we need to replace these electrons. And the way that plants have evolved for this to happen is to split water, as water is two hydrogens and one oxygen. And so when that's split, there are extra electrons that can jump back into our chlorophyll pigment, and that balances everything out. Next, light falls onto photosystem 1 at a 700 nanometer wavelength, and these electrons also gain a higher energy state. and they only jumped down to one other protein here, and in doing so, the electron's energy level falls as it's used to reduce NADP plus. So if we remember that our oil rig, oxidation is loss, reduction is gain of electrons. When we reduce the NADP plus, the electrons are joining this electron carrier to be used later on. And so it turns into NADPH plus H plus, so it's being reduced. And now all the while from photosystem two, our hydrogen ions were being pumped into our thylakoid space from the stroma. And so now there is a high concentration of hydrogen ions in the thylakoid interior, and as you can imagine, we have an ATP synthase, and that is where they can shoot through like a propeller, turning the turbine and create our ATP from ADP and phosphate. So a quick recap here, we have photosystem 2, which excites their electrons. They jump down, losing their energy and allowing hydrogen ions to be pumped into the thylakoid space, while then photosystem 1 is where our NADP plus goes to NADPH plus H plus. And so this allows ATP synthase to work. One last thing that we have to remember is that when these hydrogen ions are shooting through ATP synthase, it is called the chemiosmotic gradient, which allows them to do this because there are more hydrogen ions inside the thylakoid interior, so it's a higher concentration inside. I hope that all made sense, and if not, please re-listen and try and find some pictures online or draw it yourself to aid your understanding. So I just made myself a cup of nice hot chocolate so we can move on to the Calvin cycle. The Calvin cycle takes place inside the stroma, and this is the light independent reaction, meaning we don't need light. And we're going to be using the products of our previous light dependent reaction, which are ATP and NADPH plus H plus. And we will be doing this reaction as if it had occurred three times, because we need the cycle to have happened three times for everything to make sense. So instead of adding one carbon dioxide, I'm just going to say that we're adding three for the beginning, so that we don't have to go through it three times. We just add three of everything from the beginning, and that makes it easier for us. And remember, we are trying to make glucose, which we can then, these plants, put together to make starch and other macromolecules that we find in plants, such as potato starch. That's quite an easy example to remember. Now, the first stage is called carbon fixation, and this means that we take our three carbon dioxide molecules and they're fixed or added to three RUBPs. And RUBP is a 5-carbon molecule, and so each one of those will be 1 carbon from the carbon dioxide and 5 from this RUBP to make a 6-carbon compound. But for this to occur, we need RuBisCO to catalyze the reaction. And another thing is that it can't stay in this 6-carbon compound form because it is unstable. So it splits into two, 3 carbon molecules called GP. So at the beginning, we had three of everything. So instead of having two GPs, we actually have six, because we have three carbon dioxide plus three RUBP. Using Rubisco gives us 3 6 compound molecules that each split into two, so we have six GPs. Now the second stage is called reduction, and this is where our ATP and our NADPH plus H plus comes into use. So in the reduction stage, our ATP goes to ADP plus phosphate, and we use six of these, so one for each of our GP molecules. And now these GP molecules have more energy, higher potential energy within them, because we've used this ATP. Now that each of our GPs has higher potential energy, we also need to get more energy from our reduced NADPH plus H plus electron carriers that we created in the light dependent reaction. So these are now oxidized, and it's called the reduction reaction part of this cycle, because it's reduction of the carbon chain of the GPs. But I like to think about it in the opposite way, in the way of our electron carriers. So we're actually oxidizing them, and that was the same with the ATP. So we've got our six NADPH plus H pluses that we are oxidizing into NADP plus, and more energy is transferred along with a phosphate to our GP molecules, and that makes them become TP. And TP stands for triose phosphate, and another way to call that is G3P, which you might have heard somewhere else, but TP is what I'm going to be calling them. And so now we have six TPs, and these phosphates came from the ATPs. So these reactions kind of happen around the same time during the reduction stage to add potential energy to our now TP molecules, which are made of three carbons. The last stage is called regeneration of RUBP. And the reason why it's called regeneration is because we need to make the RUBPs that were used at the beginning of the cycle. Because with cycles, you can't just have your end products all leave, because they need to be reused as a starting piece for the next cycle to happen. So we have six TP molecules which have three carbons, and one of these TPs can actually leave the cycle to make glucose, and two TPs together make glucose. So one of them's left and is waiting for another glucose from this cycle happening again, or from happening somewhere else in the cell, because if we think about this, it's actually happening simultaneously, lots of different cycles, but it's easier for us to just look at one going on. And if you remember at the beginning, I said that we've done this cycle three times, so that's how we have six TPs at the end that have come out of this. So to rearrange them into RUBPs, we need to use three ATP molecules, and the RUBP is made using two of the TPs together. Then one of the carbons goes off, because we want to make 3 5 carbon molecules, and this works out with our 5 3 carbon molecules that we had of our TPs. So that's all rearranged. One of our TPs goes off, and when it finds another TP molecule, it will make glucose together with that one. Now that we've looked at both the processes of the light independent and dependent reactions of photosynthesis, I thought I would go and find an IB question to do with the rate of photosynthesis. And so they have asked, explain the effect of light intensity and temperature on the rate of photosynthesis. Now, if you have a think about this, both light and temperature can be limiting factors, as not enough of one of them could decrease our productivity, and that's exactly what they want you to write. So if we go into the details with light, which stage does it affect? Well, it affects the light dependent stage, of course, and if we don't have enough of this light, then not enough ATP will be produced and not enough NADPH plus H plus will be produced. And if not enough is produced, that stops the Calvin cycle from operating at its maximum rate. Secondly, with temperature, that also affects photosynthesis, but not only the light independent stage, but also at the Calvin cycle. Because temperature affects enzyme activity. As we know from the standard syllabus, a higher temperature will increase productivity, but when it gets too high, then our enzymes denature and productivity decreases again. And so you need to be able to draw this graph. It looks like a bell curve. And for light intensity, you can never get too much light, really, so it's more of an increase in productivity and then a plateau. But we might have forgot something with the temperature stage, where in the standard syllabus you could just draw your bell curve and say that enzymes reduce activity. Here in the higher level, they're asking about the Calvin cycle in particular, and so you have to say that it could be less active at low temperatures, and specifically mention that the reactions taking place, for example, the Rubisco, which catalyzes our reaction with the RuBP and the carbon dioxide at the beginning of the cycle, cannot happen if our Rubisco is denatured. So what's important here is that you really look at the question and make sure that you answer it to a higher level. Another question, this time for 7 marks instead of 8 marks, asks how the rate of photosynthesis can be measured. Now, for this question, we are going to have to write down the photosynthesis equation, which you should be able to remember with the molecular formula. But just as a reminder, it's carbon dioxide plus water with light on top of the arrow gives us glucose and oxygen. So we are asked how it can be measured. So first of all, you need to say that it can be one of few different ways, and one of these ways is how much CO2 is absorbed, because that is one of the aspects of our equation that we just drew. So that can be measured. What is another aspect of our equation? Well, we have how much O2 is produced, how much oxygen is produced from our equation. And another way, if you're thinking of a plant, is that it's increased in biomass, which is kind of the glucose of our equation, because that's what helps it. Let's think back to our potato starch. That's what the plant is actually made of. So that's why we're doing our photosynthesis. Then we need to actually explain the methods for measuring these. And so oxygen, that can be measured from bubbles that are produced in a certain amount of time. Then the mass can be measured, but it needs to be the dry mass because water does affect this. Then we can also be looking at our starch concentration in the leaves, and that's measured by iodine. As you've probably done, iodine starts off yellowish color and then it turns blue black when there's a lot of starch. So you could do something like that, or use pH to monitor how much CO2, if you have a closed system, is dissolved into the water. So sometimes you need to be a little bit creative here and just remember that looking at the equation will help you see what is produced or what goes into it. And one more thing that you need to remember is that the rate of photosynthesis measured is relative, because some of the carbon dioxide, for example, is internally used through respiration as well. As we know, in the night when it's dark, the plants actually respire as well, and some of the carbohydrates as well, the starch and the leaves, are actually used for respiration. So we need to just remember that this is relative, but using your equation and then explaining how it could be measured will give you the marks. You don't have to mention everything. Remember, when it says 7 marks, you just need to have 1 point for each mark. But if you do have enough time, I would recommend to write a couple of extra things in if you're sure they're correct, in case you didn't get the mark somewhere else and you wrote it wrong. Now that we've gone more in depth into photosynthesis, let's go back and look at the chloroplast structure and see why it has adapted these certain traits to look as it does. So first of all, we need to remember that the chloroplast has its own DNA and it has 70S ribosomes, which are smaller than our normal ribosomes. And we can remember that this is because in the past, other cells engulfed these now chloroplasts, and so they are different, and that's why they're double membrane bound. So why are our thylakoids stacked into these grana the way they are? Well, the simple answer is that we want to increase our surface area for our photosystems and the light dependent reaction. And they're stacked in this way so that there's a small thylakoid intermembrane space, and that's where the hydrogen ions build up in our light dependent reaction so they can shoot through ATP synthase. Now, the stroma of the chloroplast, this contains Rubisco and other enzymes, and this keeps our Calvin cycle moving. And so we need to remember that this is all realized due to the 70S ribosomes and different DNA, which is naked, and these code for some of the chloroplast proteins. And so that's just a quick recap of the structure of the chloroplast. Unfortunately, you thought that 8.3 was over, but there is one more part that we must look at, and this is Calvin's experiment. And the reason why we're looking at other people's experiments in the IB is because science is a quest for knowledge, if you think about it, and this progress that we've seen is only possible because of discoveries or technological improvements that have been made over time. With these sorts of parts of our syllabus, it's sometimes difficult to know what they're going to ask, but a lot of the time it's in a multiple choice question, or you might need to outline the steps. So we're not really sure, but with Calvin's lollipop experiment, what we need to know is that it's concerning the light-independent reactions of photosynthesis, and it was used for tracing radioactive carbon incorporated in the molecules of the algae that helped us to determine that it was a cycle. Hence, it was named the Calvin cycle when he proved this. So if we start off with the steps of the experiment, first of all, how did this radioactive carbon get into the algae? Well, air with CO2 was pumped into the algae, but this CO2 was labeled as radioactive. So the carbon in the CO2 is radioactive. And so when the plant photosynthesizes and uses this carbon, the radioactive carbon is stored inside the algae. And it's called the lollipop experiment just because it was a lollipop type looking round thin container. Next, the light is shone onto the algae, and that induces photosynthesis, of course, allowing the carbon to be trapped inside the algae. After a certain amount of time, some of the solution drips into boiling ethanol, so a type of alcohol, that kills it, stopping any further photosynthesis or respiration from happening. Next, we use 2D chromatography, and so that's where we have a solvent and it separates out the different carbon compounds. Next, we use an X-ray film exposure to the radioactive compounds, and they're shown onto this film when it's exposed to X-rays. And if we think about this 2D chromatography, maybe you've done an experiment with different colors on a piece of paper and put it into water, and then the colors come out over the surface of over the card or whatever you've used. And this separates out the different colors within that pigment. So it's a similar process here, except for it's radioactive. And so that's how we can see it during the X-ray exposure. And since he did many of these, he saw that at different time periods of light exposure, so let's say one card was exposed, the algae was exposed for 1 minute, the next one 10 minutes, and he had these in a series, and he noticed that the sequences of where the carbon was actually very similar, and this allowed him to identify that the light independent reactions are a cycle. And so if you look up the lollipop experiment 5 seconds, 15 seconds, 30 seconds cards on Google, you should be able to find a kind of square piece of card with different circles, and you can identify where the RUBP, where the GP and the TP is at different times. And so that's how the carbon cycle was called the Calvin cycle, because of Mr. Calvin and his experiment. Thank you so much for listening to the end. Well done. Hopefully that made some sense. If not, please re-listen, find pictures online, check your textbook, send in questions. If I've made a mistake, please let me know. And if not, enjoy the rest of your studying, and good job with getting this far.